When the president talks to God, are the conversations brief or long? Does he ask to rape our women's rights and send poor farm kids off to die? Does God suggest an oil hike when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, are the consonants all hard or soft? Is he resolute all down the line? Is every issue black or white? Does what God say ever change his mind when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, does he fake that drawl or merely nod? Agree which convicts should be killed, where prisons should be built and filled, which voter fraud must be concealed when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, I wonder which one plays the better cop. We should find some jobs, the ghetto's broke. No, they're lazy, George, I say we don't. Just give them more liquor stores and dirty coke. That's what God recommends. When the president talks to God, do they drink near beer and go play golf? While they pick which countries to invade, which Muslim souls still can be saved? I guess God just calls a spade when the president talks to God. When the president talks to God, does he ever think that maybe he's not? That voice is just inside his head when he kneels next to the presidential bed? Does he ever smell his own
big poop?
When the president talks to God, I doubt it. I doubt it.
In the rock and roll, dare I say, industry, hype is almost as powerful as the music. Duh, am I preaching to the converted? Like those of you who listen to shows like this one and radio stations like this one didn't know that. When I received a sampler back in December of a band / guy, Connor Oberst, otherwise known as Bright Eyes, I have to admit that I had missed the early hype. I had missed all of his, well, a majority of his earlier stuff. And so it was all new to me. And that was a good thing, because the hype didn't hit me till after I listened to the music and started playing it on this show. And then the PR machine just went and continues to go for 25-year-old Connor, comparing him to the new Dylan, the indie candy of the moment. It goes on and on and on. So the question would be, is he worth all the hype? And it wasn't until I went to go visit him at the Berklee Community Center the afternoon before his show on his 25th birthday, and then went to the show that evening, that I decided that, yes, he is worthy of the hype. Take the time to listen to his lyrics. Guy's been playing music since 13. Yes, there are lots of people who start young, but Connor is the real deal. And that's why it was really pleasurable that I get to bring him to you right here as today's first hour interview on this thing that I, Dennis the Menace, like to call Just Another Menace Sunday. So we'll be talking to Connor in hour number one. We will have all new music a la Dennis the Menace, melodic rock and roll in hour number two, including a cut. I played one on the Friday show. I'm going to play another today. I ponied up the cash because the record company isn't releasing it here for a while for the new Mercury Rev. That's going to be fun. Our interview with Connor of Bright Eyes kind of started with what a surprise, talking about the hype and how he feels all about it. So let's go right there. Connor Oberst, Bright Eyes, right here on Just Another Menace Sunday.
Yeah. Up and coming?
Yeah, hit and miss sometimes, but yeah.
Hit and miss. Now, why didn't you name the band Hit and Miss?
I thought about bait and switch, but settled on Bright Eyes.
Bait and switch is good. I like that. Okay, let's start with all the things that we don't want to talk about during this interview. Give me at least four things that we don't want to talk about so I can avoid everything, and then if I decide really to piss you off, we can go back there.
Okay. Well, I can tell you that if you want to know, I've been doing a lot of interviews, and the questions that I get asked are, why'd you make two records? What's up with Emmy Lou? And vote for change questions. Those are the big three.
Okay, so let's see. Question number... The Emmy Lou question's going to go away.
I mean, I'm glad.
I've got it. Here, see the Emmy Lou question, but I asked it a different way, so yeah, we'll see.
I'll happily talk about Emmy Lou because I think she's lovely, but I was just saying the most asked questions.
Yeah, and the Y2 records, I'll ask it a different way, you know, but I'll ask it this way. So, dozen albums over the years. Why do you think these two are suddenly getting so much attention? Is there something different, you know? I mean, why do you think suddenly it's like, whoa, okay, he's here?
I think just kind of stars aligning, you know? It's been a gradual, slow building, career, I guess. However
long
you want to.
Long time.
And it seems like with each album, there's a little more interest from the outside world, and I think this just kind of collided with, I don't know exactly how to explain it.
Are you kind of blown away by all the, to use a funny expression, brouhaha? I mean, after all, it's only music. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's strange. It's sometimes it's very oppressive and kind of makes me feel weird about myself, and sometimes it's like exhilarating and fun, and you know, and it's always surreal, that's for sure.
Okay, so speaking of weird, I'm in the car this morning and I couldn't resist kind of going through the album in a different way, and the monologue at the beginning of At the Bottom of Everything just totally freaked me out this morning because I'm a lousy flyer and it made me really scared. What a way to open an album. I mean, for me, it really, like, I have a 3.5-year-old daughter, and I'm, you know, get on a plane with her all the time, and I have to be the dad that isn't scared. Mm-hmm. I was like, I heard that, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I'm a terrible flyer as well. I've been getting a little better. I find Xanax helps a lot. But, when we recorded that, it was basically live in the room with, you know, the other guitar player and the bass player, and we just were doing live takes of the song, and I would sort of tell a different story. Well, they all kind of had the same ending, but like various catastrophes, like car crashes or whatever, and the take we liked with the song was the one with the airplane, so we ended up using that one.
Yeah, wow. It just, I was driving this morning, and I was like, whoa. And then, just because, you know, you had to go the other, and there's Road to Joy, which really is kind of amazing, because when you think about how you open the album, and then Road to Joy is a very loud ending to overall a very quiet album. So if it was the old days, and this is the two album question a completely different way, if I stacked the two albums on a turntable, and we went right from Road to Joy right into Time Code, because the record would drop and go plop, would that be a good plan? Would that be kind of interesting?
I don't know. I mean, to me, they don't have that much to do with each other. I think they both make sense as a Bright Eyes album within, like, all of our records, but not necessarily meant to be juxtaposed the way they have been, because obviously they came out on the same day, so, you know, we did it to ourselves, I suppose, but...
You have to get a turntable and get the vinyl and let them plop down and see what that's like.
Yeah, I've actually never listened to them back to back, so I wonder what it'd be like. But
yeah, we'll have to just try that. Do the segue there and see what happens. So for those who don't know, Bright Eyes really is kind of this ever-changing band of musicians. And I heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, that you were talking about doing two separate tours: one the folk tour and one the Digital Ash tour. Do you expect different parts of your audience to come to each, or everyone to come to both?
Well,
they're both Bright Eyes albums, and yet, you know, they are very different albums.
Yeah, I don't expect anyone to necessarily like both of the records. If I realize there's that they're different, and it's not everyone's cup of tea, you know? So I imagine the tours will be similar, you know, in that regard. They'll be sort of different audiences, but yeah, I mean, we're doing kind of like more theatery shows on this tour, and it's kind of has that vibe. And on the next one, you know, we'll be touring with a band, The Faint, who are on our label too, and we're gonna play open rooms where people can kind of dance and move around, so, and have big screens and sort of a visual part of the show. So I think it should be a totally different experience.
Yeah, definitely. And I was gonna get to The Faint in a second, but I'll go back there. What's your favorite thing about living in New York? Should everybody in Nebraska move there for a while?
I think it's good to live, you know, different places throughout your life. I travel a lot, but you don't really, you know, it's different once you stay for long enough where you sort of feel the, you know, I guess the monotony of the place, which is, even in New York, it gets to that point, you know, but I really, I love it there. It's where I think feel the best, so.
Well, there's certainly a lot of stimulus.
Yeah, it's good.
All over the place, nonstop.
Yeah, but somehow all that like really calms me down and makes me feel, I don't know, more at ease, which is, you know, I guess strange because in Nebraska there's a lot of peace and quiet, but I can feel real restless and pent up there.
Well, as someone who's kind of been involved in the other end of my career in drug-related stuff, it's amazing that, you know, where the most drugs are used, you know, meth and all that sort of stuff, is obviously in places where people are bored and there isn't as much to do. So I can understand that.
Yeah. And Lord knows, homemade drugs are the worst kind for you.
Well, there's just no quality control. We need quality control when it comes to that sort of stuff. So I've had a fair amount of contact over the years with Tom Waits, who puts out records that really reflect where he's at any moment in his life, and his record companies, you know, they take it from him. He's also acted, done a lot of soundtracks. You know, would you kind of like to have a similar life to that? Would that be a good example of a kind of, I mean, I don't want to compare you because comparing is just a stupid thing to do, but when I think of you, I kind of think of, you know, the career that Tom has had over the years, having worked with him on a bunch of things.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I completely respect him and, you know, love his music, but also I like anyone that, I guess, embraces all types of creativity and art form and just explores the, because, I mean, it's all, you know, I mean, art is all the same basic thing, you know, you're trying to understand, you know, consciousness and, you know, what it is to be a human, I think, and there's all ways to explore that. And yeah, I think someone like that who's had like such a long career doing that is amazing, and I'd be very lucky if that could happen to me.
Heck, he dated Ricky Lee Jones and then ended up a happily married man, so how can you lose with that? I've kind of read that your fans are more than a bit obsessive in trying to, quote, get to know you, to say the least. What is the strangest call out you've had at a concert recently, or just kind of give me the strangest of the strange?
Well, there's a lot of things that have happened. I guess one time it didn't actually happen to me, but one time a girl had like turned up on my mom's porch in Omaha and somehow like tracked down her house and was I forget where she was coming from, but she was driving. She drove a great distance, like from Florida or something like that. And turns out my mom's a very welcoming person, so she's like, oh, and then she just like burst into tears, and so my mom's like giving her lemonade and like comforting her on the porch. It's like,
I'm sorry, but Connor's not here right now. Please check the number and dial again.
Yeah, Connor moved out quite a long time ago, so.
But stay, you know, there's a great episode of Survivor on, if you'd like to watch it. It's funny.
And I got an amazing Valentine last night from a girl, just handed it to me. It was, I it'd be hard to describe it to you, but it was, I guess, a poem or something, an erotic poem. It was.
So no, unlike Tom Jones, they don't throw panties; they write you erotic poems.
Yeah, yeah. I've had some panties thrown, but it's not very common.
No, it's not, because you don't know what the hell to do with them. Yeah. It's like, okay, I've got this. What do you want me to do with it? You know.
I think you just hang it on a, you know, rearview mirror or something. That's about all you can do.
There's a symbolic gesture. Tells something about you, right? So I have unfortunately a promo copy of the CD, so I don't know the glow-in-the-dark message, and I don't know the poem, but I know that you did some cool stuff. So do I have to have Saddle Creek send me a real copy, or are you going to let me know what I could see if I ran to the closet for 5 seconds to see the glow-in-the-dark?
Yeah, there's a little poem on there that glows in the dark, but I'll give you a copy of the CD. We got lots here.
Good. They gave me the promo copy, and we gave away to the listeners the real one. Okay, so tell me 3 things you've read about yourself and all this publicity that aren't true, and 3 things that they should have written about that are.
Oh, well.
Or any variation of that. What's like the weirdest thing that somebody's written about you or misquoted you on that you've been like, oh, give me a break? And what would you have liked them to tell people?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a hard one to, hey. There's so much that people want you to be. It's strange, you know. I'm sure you're familiar with it, but they have to, you know, essentially they have to kind of make you a two-dimensional thing, you know, to work within the context of their magazine or their whatever their, you know, whatever their publication is, and so. I don't know. I guess I've just sort of learned to ignore it, whether it's like, you know, the pinup poster boy vibe or like the, you know, whatever, spokesman for my generation thing or all the, you know.
Take that responsibility, Connor. Come on.
I mean, it all just seems like ridiculous.
It's all about making music, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I write songs and then we record them with our friends, and then we put out the records with our friends, and then we go on tour and perform them, and that's, I mean, basically it, you know. And
but isn't it amazing that people try to make it into the circus of America, you know, or wherever?
Yeah, yeah, and I think that there's a, you know, there's a point where when you do have a chance to communicate ideas to people on a larger scale, I think it can be a really powerful and useful thing, I think, but I don't know. I'm not that used to it, so I don't really know what to do with it at this point.
So I will do the segue then. Tell me a little bit about When the President Talks to God. I personally think they should add canned laughter to the State of the Union address myself, but.
Me too. Well, it's a new song I wrote. It's kind of, I guess, yeah, more of a public service announcement than a song, I suppose. It's kind of just, I just think it's amazing that we've accepted as a country a president that is, you know, clearly doesn't understand the concept of separation of church and state, you know, is willing to, I guess, believe or say that he almost has a direct, you know, line to some divine power and that is guiding him. And
he's from Texas. That's where all the divine powers live. You didn't know that?
Yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, among other things, and I actually can't really figure it out with him. Like, if it's all just part of, you know, if that part is even false, and it's more just like, you know, I mean, I still think it's like about power and money. You know, I think it's strange when those things can, I guess, intermingle, and it's, I don't know, the whole world has a kind of a apocalyptic feel to me right now.
Yeah, we were actually talking the other day just about service. Like when you go in and try to just get an ice cream from a kid and the attitude just, you know, I want it to go. And it's like, we don't have to-go cups. It's like, it's ice cream. How could you not have to-go cups? And the world has gotten that way. You know, and I think that is a direct result of our government, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very just terrifying time.
We used to be the stars. America used to be the stars. Now the world kind of looks at us and says, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that there needs to be a realization that, you know, just because you have all this power, you know, it's not our right to impose our will on the rest of the world, you know, which I think is the kind of the crux of the whole matter, you know. And it just comes down to greed and just, yeah, I just think it's...
I think they think they live in their own little white house there and they're not quite aware. But back to the happy stuff. So this does kind of get to the faith. Saddle Creek is kind of like a label that actually started right here in Berkeley. There was a label called Berserkly that had Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers and Greg Kinn and all this stuff. Do you think it's amazing that you and The Faint and all these other bands are on the same label? And isn't that a cool thing that you and The Faint could really share a, you know, share a place? Now you're telling me you're not only doing that, but you're gonna share the music. And boy, talk about disparate music.
Yeah, it's completely amazing. I think I'm always in awe of my friends and their talents, and it's, I think.
Who would think dance music would come out of there, you know?
Yeah, and it took a long time. I mean, we all, you know, when we were first forming bands and playing together, I think we all kind of had this, well, we shared more of a similar sound, which I guess was sort of, you know, sloppy, poppy, indie rock sound. And we all sort of had bands that some, you know, fit into that category. And then as we got older and got into different music, it's like, you know, Todd and Clark from The Faint, like, kind of got into their thing, and I got into mine, and everyone sort of found their own, I guess, their own niche. But yet, there's some kind of common thread because we all came from this.
I think there's a purity in the music, you know. I mean, it's not that it's not slick by any stretch of anyone's imagination, because everything's really well crafted, but there's still an innocence to it.
Yeah, well, I think it's nice because we don't have the pressure of. I guess other people's expectations, like from a business standpoint, like it must be difficult to have people promoting and working your records that are only in it for a financial gain. You know, which is mostly the case with most labels, obviously, because of the business side of it. But I think with Saddle Creek, it's because it's more based off like friendship and love and. This idea of, you know, creating something together, it, I think, relieves a lot of the pressure that maybe a lot of other bands feel about what they're making, you know?
And it shows in the music. So, last question, which is just kind of a little tradition we have. We want you to make a Bright Eyes musical sandwich. And what we do is, and we put this together no matter what you come up with, we pretty much, and we'll send you the set, because we've done it for some amazing things. People kind of like, are you really going to play that? So what we do is we pick two of your songs as the bread, and then you can put in as many fillings from anything you've always wanted to hear along with your music.
Okay. Wow. I'd have to think about that.
Can't just
grab it out of the cabinet. Because I want it to taste good. I don't know. It tastes good with Bright Eyes songs. Well, I guess you need, like, some protein. I don't know. I think I'm terrible at this game. My mind's blank. Well, I can tell you a record I just got recently that I think is super amazing. Is you guys might know her. Her name's Feist. She's a Canadian singer. She's kind of part of that whole Toronto.
Right.
Kind of. But her record's on Arts and Crafts. It's called.
I was just gonna say. So Broken Social Scene.
Yeah,
that whole group.
Yeah. Her record is called Let It Die, and it's. I've been listening to it constantly. It's such a beautiful record. You guys would like it. It's very, like, a lot of different production, like, kind of, same reason, like, I like Suzanne Vega and stuff, because, like, it's just, like, sort of the arrangements and the production are always different, and it's a great record.
You know what we'll do? We'll fill in the rest with the faint and some of the other saddle. We'll do a little Saddle Creek thing. Okay. So thank you, Connor.
Thank you very much.
First with your hands, then with your mouth. A downpour of sweat, damp cotton clouds. I was a fool, you were my friend. We made it happen. You took off your clothes, left on the light. You stood there so brave, you used to be shy. Each feature improved, each movement refined. In eyes like a showroom. Now they're spreading out the blankets on the beach. Well, that weatherman's alive. He said it'd be raining. But it's clear and blue as far as I can see. Left by the lamp, right next to the bed, on a cartoon cat pad. Scratched with a pen. Everything is as it's always been. This never happened. Don't take it too bad. It's nothing you did. Just once something dies, you can't make it live. You're a beautiful boy. You're a sweet little kid. But I'm a woman. So I lay back down, wrap myself up in the sheet. I must have looked like a ghost, cause something frightened me. And since then I've been so good at vanishing. Now I do as I please, and I lie through my teeth. Someone might get hurt, but it won't be me. She'll probably feel cheap, but I just feel free and a little bit empty. No, it isn't so hard to get close to me. There'll be no arguments, we'll always agree. And I'll try and be kind, but I ask you to leave. We'll both take it easy. If you stay too long inside my memory, I will trap you in a song tied to a melody. So you can't bother me.
They keep turning their lights off. But Julie knows a party at some actor's West Side loft. Supplies are endless in the evening. By the morning they'll be gone. When everything is lonely, I can be my own best friend. Coffee and the paper, have my own conversations. With the sidewalk and the pigeons and my window reflection. The mask I polish in the evening, by the morning looks like shit. And I know you have a heavy heart. I can feel it when we kiss. So many men stronger than me have thrown their backs out trying to lift it. But me, I'm not a gamble. You can count on me to split the love I sell you in the evening by the morning won't exist. You're looking skinny like a model with your eyes all painted black. You just keep going to the bathroom, always say you'll be right back. It takes one to know one, kid. I think you got it bad. But what's so easy in the evening by the morning, such a drag. I got a flask inside my pocket, we can share it on the train. Promise to stay conscious, I will try and do the same. Well, we might die from medication, but we sure killed all the pain. But what was normal in the evening by the morning seems insane. And I'm not sure what the trouble was that started all of this. The reasons all have run away, but the feeling never did. It's not something I would recommend, but it is one way to live. What is simple in the moonlight by the morning never is. It was so simple in the moonlight, now it's so complicated. It was so simple in the moonlight, so simple in the moonlight, so simple in the moonlight.
drink it till you're blind. And if you swear that there's no truth, and who cares, how come you say it like you're right? Why are you scared to dream of God when it's salvation that you want? You see stars that clear have been dead for years, but the idea just lives on in our wheels that roll around as we move over the ground. And all day it seems we've been in between a past and future town. We are nowhere and it's now. We are nowhere and it's now. In like a 10-minute dream in the passenger seat while the world was flying by. I haven't been gone very long, but it feels like a lifetime. I've been sleeping so strange at night. Side effects they don't advertise. I've been sleeping so strange with a head full of pesticide. I've got no plans and too much time. I feel too restless to unwind. I'm always lost in thought as I walk a block to my favorite neon sign, where the waitress looks concerned, but she never says a word. Just turns the jukebox on and we hum along and I smile back at her. After work, when the features start to blur, she says these bars are filled with things that kill, but now you probably should have learned. Did you forget that yellow bird? Or how could you forget your yellow bird? And she took a small silver wreath and pinned it to me. She said this one will bring you love, and I don't know if it's true, but I keep it for good luck. Out into that vacuum again, from the back porch of my mind. The only thing that's alive, I'm all there is. And I start attacking my vodka, stab the ice with my straw. My eyes have turned red as stoplights. You seem ready to walk, you know I'll call you eventually when I wanna talk. Till then you're invisible, 'cause there's this switch that gets hit and it all stops making sense. And in the middle of drinks, maybe the fifth or the sixth, I'm completely alone at a table of friends. I feel nothing for them. I feel nothing, nothing. break from the city again. I think I'll ship myself back west. I got a friend there, she says, hey, anytime. Unless that offer's expired, I have been less than frequent. She's under no obligation to indulge every whim, and I'm so ungrateful. I take, she gives and forgives, and I keep forgetting it. And each morning she wakes with a dream to describe something lovely that bloomed in her beautiful mind. I say, I'll trade you one for two nightmares of mine. I have somewhere I die, I have somewhere we all die. Changing my mind. Well, I guess I am. But there's this burn in my stomach, and there's this pain in my side. And when I kneel at the toilet, and the morning's clean light pours in through the window, sometimes I pray I don't die. I'm a goddamn hypocrite. But then night rolls around and it all starts making sense. There is no right way or wrong way, you just have to live. And so I do what I do, and at least I exist. What could mean more than this? What would mean back and forth forever. All my thoughts pushed over a typewriter. I guess you'd call that painting in a cave. And there's a word I can't remember and a feeling I cannot escape. And now my ashtray's overflowing. I'm still staring at a clean white page. Oh, and morning's at my window and she is sending me to bed again. Where I dream the dark on the horizon, I dream a desert where the dead lay down. I dreamed a prostituted child touching an old man in a fast food crowd. Oh yeah, I dreamt the ship was sinking, there was people screaming all around. And I awoke to my alarm clock, it was a pop song, it was playing loud. So I will find my fears and face them. Or I will cower like a dog. I will kick and scream or kneel and plead. I'll fight like hell to hide that I've given up.
We'll be right back. I can feel it suck me in. Cause I feel I'm losing grip.
So it goes, our hour with Connor Oberst, otherwise known as Bright Eyes. Quite the interesting array of music there. We ended with a couple of tracks that he asked us to play from his Saddle Creek label that he is partly responsible for. Cursive, The Great Decay, you can find that on Saddle Creek Records. Also in that set, The Faint and I Disappear. And then lots of tracks from the simultaneous release by Bright Eyes on Saddle Creek of the, quote, folk album, I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning, and the rock album, Digital Ash in a Digital Urn. Although I have to tell you, sometimes I think it's hard to tell the difference between the two albums, especially when you hear them live. In order backwards of appearance, another traveling song, one of the three tracks featuring Emily Lou Harris. Hit the Switch. We Are Nowhere and It's Now. Time Code. Lua. And the track that I initially played many, many moons ago, Turned Me On to Bright Eyes. Take It Easy, Love Nothing. Both of those albums available on Saddle Creek. If you have any input on the interview, who you'd like to hear interviewed, Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, at menaceattic.com.
Jeannie Anderson of Pacific Union Real Estate wants you to know, when you are a regular blood donor, you help assure our community of a safe and adequate blood supply. Give blood today. This important message is brought to you by Jeannie Anderson of Pacific Union Real Estate in San Francisco. For information, she can be reached at 415-345-3050. On the air because she cares about the people in this community.
Get down, get funky, find some ganja. It's just another Menace Sunday. Dennis the Menace, I have one more piece of business before we move into hour number two.
USF has created the Diamond Circle to recognize the generosity and foresight of individuals who have provided a bequest to USF. May we welcome you as a new member? For information about membership benefits or about providing a bequest to USF, please call David Cunningham, Director of Planned Giving at USF, at 415-422-4222. 2872.
Well, if you like the music behind that PSA, you're going to absolutely hate the next hour of Just Another Menace Sunday. All melodic rock and roll a la Dennis the Menace. Get ready. Troy, get your finger on that appropriate button. And please press the button for CD number 2 right now.